This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success. Welcome to the Playbook. I'm David Meltzer, and I'm here at the Wynn in the greatest studio ever created at the Wynn Hotel with Blue Wire Studios. And I have one of my newest and best friends. I've really gotten to know him lately. And every time I speak with him, have a conversation with Dane Cook, I learn something. And that means a lot to me because I have a lot of conversations and it's not worth my time if I'm not going to learn something. And I, last night, was blessed to do a conversation with hundreds of people at a dinner, VIP dinner party. And what I found out was it's just not me. Having a conversation with Dane Cook is incredible. It's extremely entertaining, by the way, but everybody learns so much. I think they were as surprised as I was the first time of how much wisdom and inspiration you have, which is makes sense to me when you think about how successful you are. You don't get to be that successful for so long by not having that wisdom and that inspiration that just bled to everybody last night. Thank you for joining me again on a conversation, Dane Cook.
I wanted to interrupt you so bad during that entire...
Sorry.
It's just so much in the stand-up comedian persona to just get in some jabs. But I will tell you, and I'll speak from the heart when I say, I think last night is the beginning of a beautiful friendship in terms of how we... the simpatico in that room last night, and just judging by the comments and the follow-ups after... I felt like we made like a real strong impact last night. And I'm so excited to be here and chatting with you today. I learned something about David last night. A lot of people bought a lot of Caesar salads last night. Great tipper over here. Okay.
<They're>
the
big.
Man covers the tip.
Of course. We certainly do.
And that was fantastic.
You're fantastic. And it's interesting because one thing I know from the first time that we spoke is that you're not okay with status quo. You're a legend of stand-up, movies, TV. I mean, you hosted Saturday Night Live. That's traditional. That's legacy. That's legend. But from the first time I met you, you were talking about Twitch. You were talking about gaming.
Right.
You were talking about alternative people that we could have. And then you actually, you know, for me, which was a great compliment, you said, hey, why don't we try this? I really think that we compliment. We're simpatico. Let's have a conversation. Which most comedians would not want to do. They don't want to give up the stage. They want to be able to interrupt. They want to be funny. But you have a bigger picture and a greater self-image than just being a stand-up comic. Albeit when you were in ninth grade, that's what you wanted to be. But you're so much more today. What do you see and have that courage to do things other people would never dare to do?
Well, I think that, you know, part of what you learn through many, many years and many, many gigs in stand-up is that although it's about you, you know, because you're the only guy on the stage and you're standing up there with your ideas and you're doing it all when you're a traveling comedian for a lot of years. You're the producer, director. Sometimes you're the bouncer. I've had a few gigs that got a little rough and tumbly over the years, but I started to realize through the years that, you know, the gigs that were making the greatest impact were the ones that I could collaborate and kind of expand upon what I want to be doing, not just in stand-up, but how I want to grow a fan base. Very early on, learning through social media that it wasn't just having a great dynamic site. It was soul. You had to have soul within that site. And it was like, well, how do I get that? How do you, you know, bring people into this, you know, cool digital realm, but then keep them there? Well, what I learned was just sharing in real time my experiences on the come up as a comedian. So I was getting the people laughing over here, and maybe they're only interested in the show. They're laughing, they're having a blast. The people over here, they're entrepreneurial. And I wanted to speak to both sides. So I think probably about 15 years into my stand-up, I was talking to a person in the crowd one night, a heckler, right? Most people would say like somebody's going to heckle and that's going to ruin the show. And I looked at this guy who yelled something out, and instead of just burying him right there and kind of dismantling him and putting a, you know, a scarlet letter of stand-up on him for the rest of his life that his buddies are like, man, He fucked you up that night.
I found which my, I love, by the way, when you do
which
that.
Has its moment. I found myself almost in conversation with this guy. So I didn't go, I didn't blast him. Instead, I was like, you know, I know you have something to say. I don't know if I agree with what you're opining, but let me, and I started getting into what you would probably think is a conversation. The crowd didn't expect it, and I really didn't expect it. But where that took me was far more interesting than just hammering him with some material. And I remember leaving the stage that night. It was probably the beginning of the meet and greet era for me, where I wasn't just saying, truly putting ego aside, because for a long time I was like, you're meeting me. I'm sure you're excited to meet me because I'm me. And look, you're so thrilled. And then finally getting a little older and more mature and realizing the people that I'm meeting, I'm interested. I'm curious as to not only what brought them into fandom and why are they interested in any way in my journey, but what do they do? What do they bring? It was almost like the meet and greet became speed dating of me getting to know people in entrepreneurial spaces, people on the come up that needed some wisdom, people solid, people retired who'd already had great success. They're just coming out for the show. Maybe they're with their kids. So I started collecting kind of like a contacts log of fascinating human beings around the world that also happen to be fans of mine.
That is super cool because I felt that last night. In fact, I was speaking to my wife, who's a huge fan of yours, and I was like, man, this is really courageous, like to do this with me. And she goes, why is it so courageous? Because if you guys suck, everyone's just going to blame you because he's obviously, he has the talent and the humor. And she's like, just don't try to be funny. But I
don't sell yourself short, David. You're a very funny guy in a couple of years.
Thank you. Well rehearsed. And more importantly, what you're talking about is something that I realized of as we get older, because of our insecurity and our egos, we want to talk to people. We want to tell them what we think and or want to be funny or curious or clever or creative. And as we get older, I find exactly what the conversation's about is, hey, what are people listening for? Whatever background they have and circumstances of success or, you know, needs that they have, we're not going to figure that out unless we learn what people are listening for. And what came out last night in the conversation, which excites me about doing it more with you and people loved it, was I think it resonated with people. Like, that's what I was listening for. Like, you guys really spoke to me. Right. And it wasn't just entertainment. There was moments, especially on your side, of being very entertaining. And maybe I got some empathy and some courtesy laughs. I did see a couple people stand up and cheer for us. But more importantly, it wasn't that type of a presentation or a communication. It wasn't one where everyone's just going to stand up and go, thank you so much for making my night. This was so funny. It was, wow, I have a lot to think about.
Right.
What were some of the things that you've realized from our conversation that you felt were synonymous with people are listening for, like something, an issue of the day or a subject matter, a topic that you felt like, wow, everybody's really interested in this topic?
Well, I mean, I think that people are looking to evolve. And I think that everybody's always looking for, I guess you could call it like a new truth. You know, maybe they've heard some of the former cliches, or maybe they think that, you know, okay, I've heard a lot of things that seem packaged. You know, something for everybody. I think everybody wants an individual experience. I do believe, having worked with people of so many different calibers over the years and different pedigrees, that every single one of them, even the people at the top of the list that you would want to, you know, break bread with and create in front of a camera, they want to feel two things that I want to feel. They want to feel like their knowledge and years of experience are important and appreciated. And they want to learn something new and find a moment with you as the creative partner that makes them go, wow, okay, now all the stuff that I can put to good use, this person's brought in another element that I just didn't see or I was unsure of. Or maybe it's something that is, you know, new on the come up, you know, a new way that the business is evolving that I missed because I'm up here. So I do think that everybody's looking for those two things, a way to take their trait and imply and you know, implement it, and also to be exposed to something new that's going to help them to grow out whatever it is they're trying to expand upon. So people commenting last night, I think they felt, you know, if we did our job right, it's heart and humor,
yeah,
you know, in real time. And I think that where that's, let's be honest, I think where that's tricky is not everybody's ready for that caustic truth at the same time. And yeah. sometimes it's like, even in stand-up, I've had people maybe not appreciate something funny I said then, and years later will write me and go, now that I'm married, or now that I've had, and I'll get great emails kind of in hindsight why that was funny. So not everything needs to land on the night, you know? Sometimes just ruminating on things and letting things kind of slow the flex of what we were talking about last night. But when I say it's not for everybody, it's because I think that it's also looking at some of the, the former cliches and quotes and knocking them on their ass a bit and saying, it's not exactly that. I think one that I talked about last night was, fake it till you make it. Yeah, I love that. No, absolutely not. Because if you make it from faking it, you'll be in a place that is phony with a bunch of other fakers. And then it's just about course correcting. That takes a long time, man. Course correcting. It's harder almost than making it to have to tell people, I'm actually not that. I'm more of this. And so when we spoke on that last night, I thought that made like a real great...
And that resonated with me because it's amplified on social media. So you take the people that buy followers or go for the cheat, fake, you know, they end up with a bunch of fake followers. Right? And what really resonated with me, because I'm a...
But not only that, but they'll be unhappy because if you put something out there that catches everybody's attention, but it's not really in your heart, it's just something that you knew was hoopla, you might be able to do a couple more hoopla moments like that because people want to see what you already showed them, right?
Right.
Very difficult to, you know, once you're that pony to, I get some other... So you want to come in with the trick that you really love doing, because people are going to want you to do it for a long time. So if you can't, after the third or fourth moment, if you created off something that's, let's just say, you know, phony baloney, then you're going to be miserable. And then that shows.
Which is aligned with my biggest takeaway from the conversation, because I'm someone who really believes in consistent behavior of being more interested than interesting and improving myself internally, was I really gave it some thought about these, you know, one-hit wonders. And why they're one-hit wonders, it's because they haven't done the work. And every once in a while, you might land something just because of timing that makes you a one-hit wonder. But if you haven't done the work, the 17 and a half year overnight success that I talk about, right, then you're not going to have the backup song, the backup joke, et cetera.
Right.
And that would actually, if you look at like the Rolling Stones, you know, and I'm Mick Jagger, you watch him on stage at 80, whatever, like he's in better shape. I was with Sugar Ray Leonard. Sugar Ray Leonard, 65. He's like, holy shit, how's he doing this? Like physically. Oh, screaming and yelling and dancing.
Yeah, it's incredible.
But the guy's put inspiring. In the work, right? And so because he's put in the work, it's actually added value to satisfaction. Because there wasn't one person at SoFi when they sold it out, watching this old man dance and sing, right, that would have been happy if he didn't sing Satisfaction. But yet all the other stuff makes him real, that he's not just a one-hit wonder. He couldn't just have made Satisfaction. Right. He has hundreds of songs.
Isn't that indicative of what they made it with was truly what inspired them collectively? Right. Yes. And so it, in a sense, looking back on that, I can look back on my first comedy album. I didn't know if people would be listening to it and certainly not quoting it all these years later, but I knew I made something that was funny in that moment that I enjoyed. And so, but once I was done with that, I wasn't trying to recreate it at all. And so the one hit wonder kind of philosophy is like some people, and for a number of reasons that we can't get into the minutia of it, but like some people have the one hit wonder and they just want to hang their hat on that forever because maybe they feel like they deserve more praise for it than they do. Maybe they feel like that's all they needed to put into the zeitgeist. Who knows why somebody falls off at that point. Maybe it's something even more benign, like I didn't enjoy the industry side of it. I like the creative side of it. I'm married now. I've got a small business. I'm actually happier. You wouldn't know that because you just think I'm a one-hit wonder. So for a myriad of reasons, but let's bring it back to the Rolling Stones element or even something like when I did my first comedy album, put it out there. It was what it was. I knew I was as good as I could be at that moment. I also knew I was missing a lot. There were certainly tools that I needed to add to the arsenal quick funny story about that album. I got into the edit bay with a kid that was working at a radio station, just cutting commercials. He wasn't an editor, but he was editing commercials for the local rock station. And he said, I'll help you edit your album, which I was like, all right, I have all these DAT recordings. Let me figure out how to make an album. Originally, the album was called Brace for Impact. We go in and I'm editing Brace for Impact, and it's the last day of editing. And I could tell he's like something, he's nervous. And I said, what's going on? And he's like, well, we've cut 7 of the shows together to make the one show, a piece from this night. This was funnier on Saturday. This was funnier. Well, I said, play it back. And he plays it back, and every other word was fuck. I was like, because we were editing, and that was almost like something nervously I would kind of lean on. And so I'm listening to the playback, and it's like, and then I'm in the, and it's taking away from painting visual pictures with vernacular because I don't know enough jargon and ways to express myself at that point. 2 things were a blessing that day. One was I said, can we edit out some of the language? And he's like, yeah, because laughter is so strange in the background. You can edit out words and we can use some of the ambiance, which was great. So you never knew that we edited 48 F-bombs out of my first album. And then the second thing was I went in to use the restroom. And as I was standing at the urinal, there was a solvent on a shelf and it was turned around on the back. It said harmful if swallowed. And I walked out and I go, that's the title. And this is going to bomb unless we can cut like a lot of the, you know, F-bombs out of here. But from the experience of putting that out and being able to track it in real time, I've grown up with a generation of comedy fans from that album. And good fortune and happenstance was I made something that was truly of me. And I would say to anybody, whatever it is that you're putting out there, as much of it as you can, even the simplest, seemingly not important. My favorite color is, so maybe my sign should be orange and white instead of the what everybody's telling me. Go with that. Because if and when it hits, you're going to want to look back and say, man, that really was the start of me expressing who I really am through my message.
And as I look back at my big orange and black sign,
which I love too,
I've been searching for the name of our conversation.
Yeah.
And
dynamic duo.
Exactly. The dynamic duo. How do you like lessons and stories, right? Because that's what to me resonates was here's a guy that teaches so many lessons by telling a great story. And part of a great story is not only the vernacular,
right,
the humility, the honesty, the authenticity, the illumination and humility, like I said, but it's also humor. Sure. And we've sprinkled it in there, you much better than I, but in a few years, I might get good at it, or at least better, I hope. But more importantly, and most importantly, the lessons and stories that you're sharing today are powerful and entertaining, and it's a blessing to be able to give you some sort of Robin to play off of at the very least, to elevate what is pure genius. And I describe genius as an expression of God. And when you talk and we have a conversation and I get to learn the lessons from your stories, it is this expression of God, just like your first album to your last, to your movies and TV shows and stand-up and everything that you do. I just want to thank you for your authentic self. Dane Cook, you're incredible.
Thank you, David. If I could just say also in closing, you know, when you get behind your ideas, you know, meaning like you wake up every day and you know, you go through your affirmations or whatever it is that, you know, you put your faith into it, you put your whole heart into it. The win ultimately is not just the monetization and the popularity. The win was walking out last night after we, you know, finished our dialogue and then received so much intel and not just good vibe from people, but people were sharing things with me last night and opening up my world to a lot of what's happening here as I'm expanding my, you know, entrepreneurial side. So as much as I think we made our moves last night and I think we knocked it out of the park. I hope people understand, even the people that approached us, they knocked it out of the park because then they chose to trust, you know, sharing some of their experiences with me, greatens my knowledge. So it's all, you know, everybody getting something from an amazing night. So thank you, man.
Thank you. Our frequency is our neighborhood here at the Wynn Hotel at the greatest studio ever created. Thank you, Jeremiah. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.